It's so hard not to make assumptions. And this is partly just because it's how we as humans need to navigate our world. It's impossible to actually have all the information. There is simply too much information in the world to gather, never mind to analyze. We would never be able to make a decision or respond to a situation or draw a conclusion. And so we fill in the gaps with approximations and assumptions based on learned principles and past experiences, and we just get on with things. But sometimes those principles and past experiences fail us, and our assumptions lead us to draw wrong conclusions. Jesus, it seems, took great delight in poking holes in people's assumptions. The rich are not necessarily the blessed ones. The wise are not necessarily the right ones. The disabled are not necessarily the broken ones. And the outcasts are not necessarily the rejected ones. The last shall be first, and the first shall be last. Now, we know this about Jesus, which means that we have sort of upside-down assumptions when it comes to reading the Bible and encountering the characters in it. We expect their stories with Jesus to play out differently than they would with other people. And then we come to the story of Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus doesn't really fit neatly into one biblical character category, and so he thwarts not only the assumptions of his contemporaries, but our assumptions as well. So let's walk through his story a little more slowly and try to really see Zacchaeus. Luke tells us that Zacchaeus is a chief tax collector in the city of Jericho. Now, tax collectors worked for Rome, collecting duties and tolls from the Jewish population, and they made their own money by collecting more than they passed on to Rome. This meant that they were very well placed to take advantage of people. And even if they didn't do that, even if they only took what they absolutely needed, they were still collaborating with the empire, willing to work with the occupiers, even at the expense of their own community. So as a result, they were not very popular. And the character of the taxpayer was used by rabbinic sources of the time, as well as the gospel writers, as a sort of archetype for people lacking good moral character. The assumption of Zacchaeus' community and of Luke's first readers is that tax collectors are bad guys. And yet, particularly in Luke's account, Jesus is described as a friend of tax collectors and sinners. He attracts disapproval by choosing to hang out with the tax collectors instead of condemning them. He tells stories like the one we heard last Sunday, in which the penitent tax collector is held up as an example for us to follow, rather than the Pharisee who lives in a good way, but brags about it. He even calls a tax collector, a man named Levi, to become one of his chosen disciples, and Levi does it. So being a tax collector does not exclude you from the world Jesus is creating. And we, as good Bible readers, know this. And so our Bible-informed assumption when we encounter a tax collector is that they will repent and turn to Jesus, who will embrace them with open arms. We, unlike that grumbling crowd, are ready to see Zacchaeus as a model for our own conduct. But Zacchaeus is not just any tax collector. He's a chief tax collector, and Luke tells us he is rich. and rich people have another complicated relationship with Jesus in the Bible. Wealth is often taken as a sign of God's favor. Indeed, when Jesus tells his disciples that in fact being rich makes it all but impossible to enter God's kingdom, they are astonished. If rich people can't get in, what hope is there for the rest of us? And yet, when that rich young man comes to Jesus looking for life advice, he is told that if he finds following the commandments to be insufficient, he needs to sell everything he owns and give the money to the poor. In Jesus' teaching, rich people consistently get it wrong, lacking in compassion, lacking in trust, lacking in focus. Rich people in the Bible are a warning. So a rich tax collector leaves us in a bit of a conundrum. Will he be an example to follow or a warning to watch? But back to Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus is not just any rich tax collector. He is a specific rich tax collector. There is only one Zacchaeus, and he is short. He is so short and so eager to see Jesus that he climbs a tree so that he can see over the crowd. Now, climbing trees is not very dignified behavior. I suspect that short, rich men in general did not need to climb trees to deal with the crowd, because I bet that the crowd made way for the short, rich man to stand at the front. But maybe short, rich tax collectors didn't get the same treatment from the community. And so maybe Zacchaeus had needed to develop alternative strategies, and he just regularly climbed trees. Or maybe Zacchaeus mostly tried to avoid crowds, considering he wasn't very popular. But he couldn't resist the chance to see this man he had heard so much about. And maybe Zacchaeus, that rich tax collector, knew that he needed to see Jesus more than he needed to preserve his dignity, which puts him in the excellent biblical company of blind beggars, lepers, women, and children, all of whom are welcomed by Jesus. And it worked. It worked probably better than Zacchaeus imagined. Not only was he able to see Jesus, but Jesus saw Zacchaeus. And this seeing was more than just laying eyes on him. Jesus saw Zacchaeus up in that tree and knew him. Knew him by name. Knew who he was. Knew what he needed. And so Jesus invites himself over to Zacchaeus' home, and the crowd starts to grumble. But we know better. We've got the story firmly pegged now. Zacchaeus is the story of a doubly repentant sinner, a rich tax collector who knows he needs Jesus and is so transformed by the encounter that he declares he will give away half of all he has and provide more restitution than the law demands. We can safely pass judgment on the grumblers, not because they misjudge Zacchaeus, but because they don't understand Jesus. Aren't you glad we understand Jesus? That's a good story. It might even be an accurate story, but there is at least one more possibility, partly hidden by assumptions made by the translators and the choices they made, partly probably hidden by our own assumptions. In the Bible text we read this morning, we heard Zacchaeus respond to the grumbling by telling Jesus and the crowd, "Look, half my possessions, Lord, I will give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone, I will pay back four times as much." I will give. I will pay back. The catch is that in the Greek text, that's not what Zacchaeus says. Zacchaeus uses present tense verbs to describe his behavior. So it would sound like this. Zacchaeus stood there and said, "Look, half my possessions I give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone, I pay back four times as much." Sounds less like a transformation and more like a defense. Maybe our assumptions about rich tax collectors have led us and the grumbling crowd astray. Maybe Zacchaeus is not like those other tax collectors. Maybe his wealth has always served his community and not only his own desires. Maybe he was so eager to see Jesus not because he needed to be forgiven, but because he was excited to see a teacher who he was already following. Maybe the grumbling crowd has misjudged Zacchaeus, but maybe we have too. They assumed he wasn't capable or worthy of forgiveness. We assumed he needed it. And that is a particularly tricky kind of mistake to make, being gracious about other people's need before they tell us they're in need of anything. Its roots might be in good soil. It is good to be concerned about others' need, good to be eager to extend second chances. But if you have ever had someone promise to pray for you to get something that you don't want, or if you have ever had somebody offer their forgiveness for something that you didn't do, it's not a good feeling. And how much worse if that situation arises not out of miscommunication, but out of assumptions made about our bodies, or our age, or our race, or our economic situation, or our job, or our family, or our gender. Each of us desires and deserves to be seen as the full, complex individuals we are. The good parts, and the bad parts, and the in-between parts. At the end of this story, Jesus declares that he has come to seek out and to save the lost. And we assume that the one who was lost was Zacchaeus, and that the reason he was lost was through his own doing. But maybe that's too easy a story. Maybe Zacchaeus was lost because everybody had stopped looking at him. Maybe Zacchaeus was not the only one who was lost. When we reduce someone else to our assumptions rather than their reality, we are all of us diminished. We need the wonderful diversity of one another's true, messy selves for the flourishing of the human community. We need one another to balance and challenge ourselves, to reveal more and more of the nature of God in whose image each one of us is created. Jesus looked up in that tree and saw Zacchaeus, a whole person, and not just an archetype to be used for a good story. When we look around ourselves, here in this church community and out there in the world, can we give people the opportunity to be who they really are, even if, especially if, that disrupts our understanding of how the world works and who we are and how we fit into it? We all want to be seen with the eyes of Jesus. Are we prepared to look with the eyes of Jesus too? So, which story did we read this morning? The story of a repentant sinner, or the story of a misunderstood man restored to his community? I don't know. But I think that there is value in learning to hold both possibilities open, to train ourselves to go through our lives resisting easy assumptions about the Bible and about the people around us, so that more and more we are able to look with the eyes of Jesus.